hey, y'all, welcome to another edition of The Journey of Hope. So glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. My special guest today is Lisa Orban. Lisa provides a safe place for ex-felons to go as they get themselves back on their feet. And we're going to talk about what makes what she does so successful so that you can apply those things to your reintegration. And we'll be talking to Lisa right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on The Journey of Hope. Love to hear from you. MathersRodney@yahoo.com, MathersRodney@yahoo.com. Welcome back. My guest today is Lisa Orban. Lisa offers a safe place for ex-offenders to get themselves on their feet, and she says she has about a 90% success rate. We're going to ask her about all of that. She also has a book out called It'll Feel Better When It Stops Hurting. Welcome, Lisa, to The Journey of Hope. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good today. Thank you for having me on your show.
You're welcome. Hey, we always like to start on the Journey of Hope by having our guests give us a little bit of background about themselves. Can you tell us about yourself?
I'm an author. I write memoirs. My book, It'll Feel Better When It Quits Hurting, kind of chronicles that journey. Okay. My father was a police officer. Okay. And so I have a lot of knowledge of the inner workings, you know, of how the police force works and things like that.
Right.
When I was 16, I went into foster care, and because of a lot of contention within the family. But anyway, I had a foster mother named Eulogene Phillips, and she was an amazing woman. She was probably the best foster mother I ever had. And when every girl that came in, she only took girls, but every girl that came into her house, you know, she basically gave us the same talk, and it was, when you come into my house, I'm giving you a clean slate. Whatever you did before doesn't matter. What matters is what happens from here forward. And for a foster child, that is a huge, big thing, because, you know, your past follows you around. And I remember that lesson. And, you know, she made each of us feel loved and welcomed and accepted. And we all did very well in our home because our past was not an anchor anymore. You know, we were being judged only by what we were doing. And so it made life easier for us. Mm-hmm. And encouraged us. Well, as I grew older, I've haphazardly throughout my life kind of taken in people. It started with a guy named Sean in Phoenix when I lived out there, and he was homeless. I didn't know he was homeless at the time when I first met him. He rescued me, and I kind of in turn rescued him. And so he kind of came in and out of my life, and there were other people that were homeless or in trouble that I kind of took in. Well, about, it's been over a decade now. It kind of started by accident, but I started taking in more and more people, and I was starting to get more, you know, ex-cons, and it wasn't that they were bad people. These were young 20-somethings that had done something incredibly stupid. I had one guy that he had a beer, and he was 20 years old, and a friend of his was very, very drunk, and he said, no, you're not going to drive. I'm going to take you home. And he was not by any means drunk. He'd had one beer all evening, and he happened to get stopped at a checkpoint. Well, he got a ticket for driving DUI, underage drinking, and it took him 6 years, from 20 years old to 26, to get out of the snowball that had happened because of this particular incident. You know, he had tried to do something good, and ended up very bad, and he ended up with this very long, you know, rap sheet, and it turned into a felony, just because of they kept adding more things onto the initial charges, and he needed a break, and he ended up coming into my house, my home, and he got that break that he needed, and I helped him navigate, you know, through the court systems and with his parole officer and this, that, and the other. And eventually he did, he got out of the system and he's moved now to another state and has a stable job. And, you know, he went to school while he was here and he got his life back together. And that's essentially what happens with a lot of these guys. They come in and they've hit rock bottom and they can't get work and they can't find, you know, a place to live. They don't have any stability. And so they keep going back into the system because it's been more or less set up against them. And I give them that break, that breather they need to go from the constant mill of in and out of courts to a stable family life. And I tell each and every one of them, when you come in here, you have a clean slate. Whatever you've done before doesn't matter. What matters is what you do from this day forward.
Right.
And that's what you will be judged on. And they walk out of my house and they have confidence in themselves again. A lot of them walk out with, they've gone to college or they've gotten experience, you know, and I help them find jobs. And then a lot of times once they leave my house, I have them scattered as far as Alaska, New York, Florida, you know, and they do well. They get jobs and they start businesses and they have families, and it's very satisfying.
I can't imagine going through the court system without having somebody to talk to or something. It's just, it's terrifying. But, you know, equally as terrifying is walking out of that prison, especially if you have no support. You're so far behind the eight ball that, you know, it's just almost impossible. Society seems to kind of kick people that go to prison to the curb. And so let me just, before we go any further, tell you, you know, thank you for what it is you do. Now, you say that you provide a place for ex-offender. What are we talking about here? Are you talking about your home?
Yes, my home. They live in my home with me.
Wow.
And it's not a shelter. I mean, there's no curfew. You don't,
right.
You know, there's no required things. I mean, they have to look for work. You know, or they go to school, they have to, you know, and a lot of times I encourage them, like, all right, sit down and I want you to tell me, what do you want out of life? What it is that you want? Dream big. And then let's start setting up the steps that will get you to where you want to be. And if you, because big dreams seem impossible until you break them down into small steps. And then I help them get from there, from, you know, point A to point B, so to speak.
Do you have more than one at a time or one at a time?
Oh, yeah. I currently have two. Two in my house. I have to think. I know that sounds terrible. But, I mean, I have a frequent turnover, but they leave on their own accord. I don't have a time limit. I don't say, okay, you have to get your life together in 6 months. I say, get your life together. And then they choose when they feel comfortable and confident enough to leave. So
you do have to do it yourself. You know, it's not something that you can cut corners and cheat on. You do have to pick yourself up. And I mean, it's wonderful that you're helping and it's wonderful to have help. But the bottom line is we don't make any progress if we have somebody propping us up. We need to do it ourselves, and we recognize that, which is excellent. And, you know, again, just what a wonderful thing you do, bringing people into your house. I didn't realize it was into your house. Okay, let's talk about your book a little bit. Now, my understanding, I haven't read your book, but my understanding is the seeds of writing that book had to do with a game or something that you played with your friends.
Oh, well,
Tell me about that.
Me and my friends, we used to play what we called Jerry Springer, the home game.
Okay.
Because I had a lot of third shift. I had a lot of people at the house at the time that was working like second and third shift. And so like at 2 o'clock in the morning, we would all be hanging out and there's not a lot on TV. And we would faithfully watch the Jerry Springer show. And we would sit down with these little cards, and we would write down every single episode that we qualified for.
Don't tell us how many it was.
You know, I was the reigning champion. Okay.
Wow. Okay.
And so you'd have these, you know, we have these moments, and of course, so we're shouting, I got this one, you know, and whoever had the best story won that particular round. And it was just, it was a fun game. But it kind of, and me and my friends will often play who's got the worst life right now. And I'm often the winner. And it's actually kind of a big deal. I won! You know, you're not winning anything great because obviously your life is the worst one out of all of your friends. But you can at least claim championship, and so that's something.
Gotcha. Okay.
You know, so the back of my head, when everything bad happens, I'm going, well, at least I won. You know.
Okay, so tell us a little bit. Tell us, Lisa, about the book. What is the focus of the book, and how can it help ex-offenders?
Well, my book is, you know, and weirdly, because it is a memoir, you know, and I'm female, it really seems to resonate a lot with men. I have gotten some of the most eloquent and profound emails back from men, which is kind of surprising to me because a lot of people think, oh, well, it's a memoir and she's a girl. But I think part of what it is while people may not experience exactly the things that I have gone through, we all have those moments and those feelings that we all kind of share as we're stumbling through life. And I went through a lot of very, very bad things and a lot of things that were completely outside of my control, and such as going into foster care. And I ended up, unfortunately, in an abusive situation with my first husband. Mm-hmm. And we all kind of find ourselves, you know, we all make these mistakes, and we all kind of, even when we try to make all the right choices, we find ourselves in bad places. And from there, it depends on... it's our attitude and how we cope with those things is how we go forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I could have become very resentful. I could have become very enclosed in myself. I could have, you know, hated every single man on earth because of the things that have happened to me. And instead I chose a different path. And one of them was forgiveness. And the other one was saying, okay, this is, you know, I've made a lot of mistakes in my life, but you don't have to punish yourself, and you don't have to be punished forever for making a mistake, because a mistake is, you know, it's a life lesson that I have paid dearly to learn.
Right.
And it, you know, and hopefully it has given me some wisdom, and I very conscientiously attempt to never make the same mistake twice, which doesn't mean I don't make mistakes. It means I'm making new ones all the time, but I'm learning, you know, as I go, and I'm hopefully getting a little bit wiser and a little bit smarter. And when I, 2 weeks after I die, I'll probably have it all figured out. but, you know, but it's a lot about forgiving yourself and learning to move on from tragedy and learning to move on when the world has backed you into a corner and you feel like there is no hope, that, you know, that you can find that hope if nowhere else within yourself.
I like, you know, those kinds of books, Lisa. I like those kinds of books. I like to recommend them to people. And I like to read them. So how do we find your book?
Well, I am on Amazon. I am on Smashwords. I'm on Barnes & Noble, Kobo. I'm on Chatty Book. I'm pretty much...
Chatty Book? That's a new...
Yeah! Book. Actually, that one's pretty. I like this one. It's a little more interactive and than a lot of them. It's a newer one.
Are you on Kindle?
So it's small.
Do you have the Kindle version?
Yes, it's cool. Kindle. You can get it in Kindle. You can get it in EPUB, PDF, mobile. You know, I think it's in, currently it's in 7 formats.
Oh wow!
I'm working on an audiobook,
cool.
So you'll be able to hear me personally
cool.
narrating it, because I decided, since it is a memoir, that I should be the one to read it, because I want people to hear my inflections and my voice and me laughing. I'm well known for my laughter more than anything. A couple years ago,
humor is important, isn't it? When you're addressing
yeah.
situations of adversity, and I can see that in you. I can see that you use the humor, and I hope that you're telling that to your guys when they come through your help that you're giving them there.
Oh yeah,
you gotta keep a sense of humor, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, if you can laugh about it, you can get over it. You can get through it. You can survive it if you can laugh about it. And I have been through some very, very dark, terrible moments in my life. Mm-hmm. And some of them I can't necessarily laugh, but I can breathe a sigh of relief and then laugh and say, I survived. I actually made it through this, you know, more or less intact. And, you know, and that's, in a way, that is something of a victory. It's not a, you know, 100% win, but if you can live to tell the tale, then you have accomplished something. And if nothing else, it's your own survival.
You're absolutely correct, Lisa. And the book is called It'll Feel Better When It Quits Hurting. I wish we had more time, Lisa. Thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope today. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me, dear.
We're going to take another quick break, and we'll be right back after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Always remember, you can catch me at Mathers Rodney at yahoo.com. MathersRodney at yahoo.com. To thank my special guest today, Lisa Orban, and I want to remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.